Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future we hope for. I'm John Curtis and I'll be joined by various members of the EV Cafe crew, and this week it is the quite wonderful Woman of the Year, Sarah Sloman. How are you, dear Sarah?
Why, hello. I would say frenetic at best, but excited for this evening's Fleet News Awards. But before that, very happy to welcome Guy.
I know, it's exciting times because we've got the amazing privilege to do this and to talk to some quite remarkable pioneers, innovators and collaborators across industry. But this is the first time we've spoken about aeroplanes, and welcome the legend that is Guy Hayden. Hello, Guy.
Hello, John. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Legend, is that about right? Or is there more to come?
I wouldn't say legend yet. I'm working towards legend status, trying. That's for you to decide.
So you're the chief commercial officer for AeroVolt.
I am.
Who are AeroVolt for those who have yet to hear of them?
So AeroVolt are a relatively new business. It is, at the moment, it's two founders and myself. I'm the first person to join the business. And we are, as I say, we're a startup. We are building the future of aviation in that we're building a network of chargers for electric aircraft. So much the same as you've got in the electric car industry, we're building a public network for people to fly in and charge.
Okay, that sounds very futuristic, because the number of electric planes there are must be pretty small. What's your market?
Yeah, so it is pretty small. So AeroVolt, we own, in fact, 10% of the entire fleet of electric aircraft currently in the UK, which totals okay. One aircraft. So our 10% totals one. So there's 10 in the country at the moment. And there's only one you can buy commercially. It's called the Pipistrel Velis, made in Slovenia. But if you look at what all the OEMs are doing and all the manufacturers of light aircraft, they all either are launching projects, they've got dates for aircraft to be commercially available, or they've got projects that are in background testing or in design.
So this is an acorn.
This is the thing about the customer. Oh, acorn grows oak trees. But this, I was going to say, Guy, even though there's not many of these in the country, but the market seems a little untapped and also ripe. So maybe not an acorn, maybe something more solid. But for example, it's not just, everyone thinks, oh, airports is going to be like Heathrow is going to have these things installed. But actually, it's not that. It's smaller landing strips, it's farms, it's those more like where people, if you think where people would go and do a sort of leisure flight at a weekend or helicopter ride or something like that, that's where these things are prime because of the scale and size of the actual vessel, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the moment, it's two-seater light aircraft. There's a four-seater and coming in the works. But essentially, yes, it's light aircraft. It's people who fly for a hobby. It's flight schools. It's that end of the market. That's where the technology's starting. If you like, and I've used this before, whilst I'm not a fan of the G-Wiz, that's essentially where we're at as an industry. And that's not to take anything away from the Pipistrel Velis, because it's a really cool bit of kit. But as an industry, it's that first iteration of vehicles. I personally think once you get to smaller business jets, you're probably looking into hydrogen tech and different things from there. But absolutely, electrification on light aircraft, it's a proven powertrain. A lot of the technology is borrowed or comes from the car industry. So there is absolutely nothing to stop us as an industry. But yeah, it's absolutely early days.
What would you say, Guy, to those people who already have range anxiety about cars? Because range anxiety, you know, if you get that wrong in a plane, you're going to come to a sticky end.
Yeah, absolutely. Same as if you run out of fuel in a plane, you know, the jeopardy is certainly higher. But people jump in their car to go down the shops and then realize they've only got 10 miles of range left. That's kind of normal. But the world of aviation, all of your flights are very planned. That's part of what you do. People use pieces of software, like there's one called SkyDemon, which I can come on to later. But there's one called SkyDemon, which is the go-to planning app. People go on there, they plan their flights, they plan where they're going, their range. They have enough fuel for reserves. So actually, the concept's no different.
Wow.
We had this thing where we were on the news talking about how AeroVolt has signed with Electroverse. So there was a great, really interesting story, because it was a bit like, well, that's exciting, but at the same time, it's obviously not many, you know, proof of concept at this stage, of course. So where did that partnership come from and the decision to kind of headline together?
Yeah, so I mean, that as a conversation started long before I got involved with the business. In fact, you know, Octopus and the Electraverse, it's not just about cars. If you go onto the Electraverse app, there's lots of different vehicles and charging standards on there that are represented. And it just made sense that because we, you know, de facto are the leaders in electric aviation, we're the only people doing this in the world, Octopus wanted to speak to us. So it's just really cool now that you can go onto the Electraverse app and filter by essentially charge type, or filter by plane charging. It's just a really good signal for the industry.
It's really cool. You know? Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah. So, Guy, tell us about how you become an entrepreneur. What's your journey been like? Because you're clearly somebody who has an idea and goes after it. How did you get here?
Yeah, I've been called a JFDI person, and I think that's probably key, right? Just brackets do it. And I think that's me. I think a lot of my career history has been that. So it's weird, actually. So my career, you're going to get the long history now. So my career has come full circle. And that's why when Aerovolt came along, it was a strange kind of serendipitous moment in my career. It was just like, this is clearly what I'm meant to be doing. So my first job out of college was, other than being in a band, but that's something different. So whilst I was in the band and my first job out of college, what I always wanted to do was fly. So I didn't come from any money. It's very, very expensive to learn to fly commercially, you know, in excess of 100K. And that was kind of, you know, not an option at the time. There wasn't any funded scheme. So I joined the Navy. I did Royal Navy officer selection. Yeah, so that took a couple of years to go through all of that process to get selected to join the Navy as an officer. And of course, I wanted to join as a pilot, which I went through pilot selection and all the rest of it, and got in. So I was down at Britannia Royal Naval College doing my officer training, with obviously the dream of being Top Gun, you know, wanting to fly off aircraft carriers.
Obviously.
Obviously, fly the F-35. So that was kind of the plan. And I was down at Britannia Royal Naval College with a peak cap, and it was all very cool. And then after 4.5 months or so, I got medically discharged for having a peanut allergy. So that was the end of my glittering naval career. And that obviously came as a shock. So I thought, what am I going to do with my life? So I came back home, ended up going to university. And that led me to studying abroad, which led me to living abroad, and I started teaching English and had a language school, which I built a business up because I got bored pretty quickly having, you know, just teaching English, just being an English teacher, and thought I could do this myself. So opened a language school, employed 15 teachers at the point that we sold that business. But it was a lot of micromanagement, and it wasn't really what I wanted to do long term, but it made sense. So After selling that business, or there was a bit of an overlap actually, I got offered a role at a Czech electric motorcycle manufacturer. So that led me into the world of electric vehicles. Not by kind of plan, it's just I found this company called Kuberg, thought they look pretty cool on the strength of a Google image search. And sent the CEO an email. He said, let's have a chat. And so, yeah, I ended up selling electric motorcycles, doing international business development, so setting them up in new markets around the world. So, you know, went to some cool places. I was involved in, you know, the Australian business and the Middle East business, a lot of Europe, also the US, so various different places. And then really, that's where I got into the world of electric vehicles and really started to think, this is what I want to do. The Czech electric vehicle market's probably about 5 years behind where we are at in the UK. That's probably still the case today, 4 or 5 years different. Essentially, it's probably us versus Norway. You know, the Czech Republic is probably there. So Norway are perhaps 4 or 5 years in front of us. Czech Republic's maybe 4 or 5 years behind. And that's the same for a lot of European markets. So the time was right for me to move back to the UK. And I ended up back in the UK working for Instavolt, who you all know and love and use, indeed, I'm sure. So putting chargers in the ground in the UK, and still to this day, I drive around the country going, that's one of mine, that's one of mine, that's one of mine.
And you're that person.
Everybody knows me and gets sick of it, I'm sure. So I did that, and then that led me to head of sales at Siemens, selling chargers and doing the full supply, install, maintenance, the whole life cycle. And then the Zaptec opportunity came along. So people know me, obviously, a lot of people know me from Zaptec. So Zaptec manufacture AC chargers, and I set that business up in the UK. So I was the first UK employee. It was me and a laptop, and I grew that team out, that wonderful team out. Hopefully some of them will listen to that. Hopefully some of them will listen to this, but I grew that wonderful team out. And then last year is when the Aerovolt opportunity came along. So I've gone back to flying after all these years in electric vehicles.
Okay.
There you go. That's a short-potted history.
Those of us who are listening who don't know Guy yet, that's the whole point of this podcast, right? To get to know the person on the show. That's Guy. People would be thinking, oh, come on, this guy's got to be in his 50s with a career that long. But actually, that's completely not the case. The thing I just can't get over, and I've known you a number of years, very proud of that fact, but how did you get
that's
to that
mutual.
Stage?
That's mutual.
Thank you. How did you get to that stage and not know that you had a peanut allergy? You've never been in a pub and eaten a peanut. You've never been around at Christmas and Gran puts all the nuts in the bowl. Honestly, what? How? How did that happen? Why?
I did know, and I declared it before I went in. Obviously, you have to fill in quite a lot of forms, as you can imagine. So I can only think it didn't get picked up or whatever until that point. And it got found out, essentially, because when you're in the Navy, they give you injections for everything under the sun. So I went to HMS Raleigh one day for a load of injections, which I got. So that was good. I got a little freebie. So I got all the injections and had to fill in a form, standard form, and it said allergies, and I put peanuts. And then, of course, as part of that, you have to go and see the doc. So I went to the doctor and he said, says here, you got a peanut allergy? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, you do realise that means you can't serve. And my reaction was, what?
Heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. Yeah. I know you're smiling. If anyone's watching, this guy is smiling. But I would have said that would be devastating.
If they're watching it, they can see for themselves he's smiling. If you're listening.
It was at the time. But it's one of those things sometimes in life things happen and they seem terrible, but actually where I've got to now and what I do, I really do love and I wouldn't trade it. Even if I could choose to be a fighter pilot flying jets, I actually wouldn't change it for what I'm doing now. So,
but you find, I mean, you're somebody who's a serial entrepreneur and it sounds like you stood in golden something at birth. And you've just had this charmed life right the way through, other than a peanut allergy. And the reality is that we all learn much more from failure and the things that don't go well than we do from the things that do go well. The peanut allergy must have set you back, and there must be other things, Guy, in your life that haven't quite gone according to plan. Can you give us an example of something that really bit you? And how you clawed your way back? Because you just seem like a rubber ball.
I suppose it depends how deep we want to get.
Let's go. Deep.
Come on, dig, well, dig.
Well, in terms of charmed life, like certainly personal and family stuff, it's not been, and I've come from a background of it being kind of quite a difficult upbringing. So, you know, born back in 89, 8 days later, my dad died of leukemia when I was 8 days old.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, so my natural dad died when I was really, really young. And that's something I grew up with, but I was adopted when I was two. Still the same mom, but adopted by my dad, so I'd have the same name as my brother and sister, and we were brought up together. And he got, he was first diagnosed with a brain tumour when I think I was about 7 or 8. And so from that age, really, when I was old enough, I suppose, to understand any of that, we grew up with Dad always being ill. He had various operations. We thought he was going to go into remission. And then when I was 11, he got re-diagnosed. And essentially from then, it was a slow decline through my teenage years. And he died when I was 15, sorry. So when I was doing my GCSEs, we were caring for him on a 24-hour basis. And I was sleeping on a camp bed in the lounge. We had a hospital bed for him. And so the background I've been brought up in has kind of been one of very loving family. You know, lots of people don't get that, and I know I've been very lucky to have it. But certainly there has been challenges. And I think that's where a lot of my kind of JFDI thing comes from. It's a matter of, you know, get your head down and do it. And yeah, if I look back on that, it certainly hasn't been a charmed life, but I think that it certainly says where a lot of my personal drivers come from, I think.
And that's the whole point of doing this podcast is, you know, we see success. Everybody wants to talk success. Everybody wants to say, look at what I'm doing right now. But the reality is that those formative years, for you especially, seem to have been the years that have made you just say, do you know what? There is nothing I can't do. And I'm going to take my chances with both hands and run like hell.
Probably. Doesn't always feel like that, but I think it's probably taught me, you know, one way or another, you find a way through. And I think, you know, one of the questions you sent me is what advice would you give your teenage you? Which I kind of thought about that one. And I think it's, you know, probably learn to worry less, you know, learn to worry less, learn to trust yourself more. And yeah, I think that's probably what I've learned.
So learn to worry less. Do you have techniques for doing that? Do you, when you do get
absolutely not
stressed?
It's, no, it's just again, not. Don't ask that. Me. I'm not an expert. I'm still on that journey. But
what works for you though? Because you know we all get that overwhelming. I had it on Monday. A very overwhelming feeling that I was behind the curve. It just wasn't happening. I was losing the plot, and I had to take myself away and do some things that I know calm me down. What do you instinctively do? I listen to music, I have a coffee, I sleep, a shower or a bath is always really good for me. And I've never been taught those things. I just know they work. What instinctively do you do?
That's a really interesting question, John. Work, I think.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, Guy. I've certainly,
and I know loads of people do this. Like when things have been difficult, even at work or outside of work, yeah, I think I find solace in working. It's a world that I know I can control, and I know that when I'm good, I'm quite good at what I do, you know? So I think I probably find quite a lot of comfort in working, essentially, which probably sounds really sad, but yeah.
I don't think it's sad at all. No. And I completely relate. And actually, when you were saying, John, that, you know, a sleep or a coffee or a bath, that would stress me out even more than I was already stressed, because I'd be sat there thinking, well, hang on, it's just building up now. This is great. And the second it's over, then I'll go back out. But actually, Guy, you did miss off one very important thing that I know you do, because I've had the pleasure of being invited. Tikka, meat and chips at one of your favourite microbreweries near your home.
That's
the best thing ever, isn't it? Just chatting away, putting the world
that's
to rights.
And that's a guy and Sarah thing, though, something. Isn't it?
Yeah, I think it
maybe
works.
That's
though.
A guy and Sarah thing.
Just putting the world to rights, thinking about friendships, thinking about support networks, thinking about ambition and how to reach that goal. And you've always said to me, like, this is never the end. There's always something else.
True. And me and Sarah are both a lover of a pub, so I think the pub probably does factor into this somewhere, you know?
I find it, I'm a non-drinker because I've become an unpleasant human being. It's not good with my autism and ADHD, and I tend to become unpleasant. However, I get that same buzz from going to an event, from seeing people who I can have a conversation with about what we're doing and sharing some of my enthusiasm for life. You seem like somebody who's hugely enthusiastic for the things that you take on. What are you most proud of, Guy? That you mentioned Siemens and InstaVolt and Zaptec. You've created some really incredible things. You're a pilot. What is it that when we look back on your life, people say, do you know what? That was a hell of an achievement.
Correction, I'm not a pilot yet. I am learning to fly this year.
Of course.
As soon as we close our funding round, I've joined AirVault on the promise of a PPL, so I will be doing a private pilot's license. The reason I didn't do it, interestingly, up until now, is I couldn't talk about electric vehicles all week and then go and burn a load of fuel at a weekend. So actually, It didn't fit for me, and I would have got torn apart by people like yourselves, rightly so. So now I can do it on electric, then I will be doing so later this year. However, what am I most proud of? I guess two things, actually. I'm really proud of what I'm doing now. I'm really proud that I get to say we are the first and only business doing this in the world. That's cool. Not many people get to say that in their career, and it's brilliant to have an opportunity to do that, to really make a difference and stand back in 5-10 years and have emulated in some way what the pioneers in the EV industry in the UK have done. You know, I worked for Instavolt, got a great respect for Osprey, you know, GridServe, the businesses like that who set up those networks years ago when people were going, well, electric vehicles, is it really going to be a thing? It will be great to have done that for electric aircraft. So that I am proud of. And long may it continue. But also, I've got to say, I'm really proud of my previous role. So setting up and bringing Zaptec to the UK is something that I am proud of having done. But most of all and more than that, I am very, very, very proud of the team of people that we put together. I take that as one of my career-defining times and one of the times that I'm most proud of because of the quality of that team, the people that I got to choose to work with, the people that wanted to join what we were doing in the UK, and that group of people. You've met them, you know most of them, I'm sure. What a group of people. And while we were there working together, I was really proud of those guys, and I still am.
I'm delighted you mentioned people because you're clearly a very warm, engaging human being, somebody who's got a big smile on his face. Has anybody in your life really inspired you to be the person you are today?
See, this is another one I thought about. This was one you sent me before and I thought about this. I don't think I have one answer for that, really. There's lots of people in the industry I find inspirational, lots of businesses. I think they've done some really cool things. But in terms of individuals, I mean, probably have to be my granddad. Most people would probably cite parents, grandparents, but growing up, obviously mentioning what we've been through, granddad was certainly a rock in the family, a lovely bloke, a funny man, someone that you could always go to for really good advice. And a lot of the time when I had career decisions to make, especially in the early days, I would go to him. So, yeah, I think for that level-headed approach, but also being like I'm not going to say he's the patriarch because he wasn't. We have a matriarch in our family and always have done, and that's my nan. But if you wanted the calm, cool, level-headed guy, that would be my granddad. And yeah, he certainly influenced me growing up, you know, having dads that were ill and a lot to deal with. He was a big part of our life.
And I suppose you've become that kind of leader, haven't you, in that, you know, you recognize the value of having guidance and that direction and somebody to be able to go to bounce things off of. Has that shaped you as a leader and the things that you deliver?
Potentially. I always say when running teams, and certainly when I was running the team at Zaptec, at the moment, we don't have a team at Aerovolt because we're really young, but we will have, you know, we'll be building out. I always say your number one job is to look after your people. If you look after your people, they look after you, you know, and that's what I spent most of my time at Zaptec doing. That's what being an MD is really all about. It's strategic, but look after your people is probably 80% of what you end up doing. And they really shaped the way that I ran the team, I guess. You know, I don't think I'd take any credit for having led them. I think you employ really good people so they can tell you what to do. You don't employ really good people and tell them what to do. So I employed the best people I could possibly find and I suppose let them get on with what they were good at and took some really bloody good advice off them.
I will credit you for that, actually, Guy. I wrote in the chat here, I'm having signal issues, but I did say his team adored him. Ask anyone and they will celebrate his leadership. And I think that's because you do surround yourself with people who can lift the whole team up rather than just individuals striving for themselves the whole time. And I just, I know this year you entered the Green Fleet 100 most influential list, coming in the mid 80s, was it? Did you remember that that day in your diary and celebrate it?
I think number 81. Actually, this year was I on the Green Fleet this year?
Oh well, that's not the way to win hearts and minds, is it? Because I was about to
it's
ask
not,
if you were going to take part in the Green Fleet rally.
In all fairness, I looked through and didn't see my name this year. I know I've been on it for the last three. That's very good news if I am, to be honest. Am I actually on the list, Sarah, 2024?
Well, I'm holding my phone up. It says 2024 Guy number 81. I'll send you a screenshot.
Oh no, you're gonna have to cut that bit. That's actually made my day.
There's no way we're cutting that. Absolutely not.
I think I was going into a meeting at the time and it had come out and a couple of people had posted on LinkedIn and I looked at the list and I flicked through and I couldn't see my name and I was like, oh, fair enough. I'm not in the world of electric road vehicles
anymore. I know how you can make this up. We think we need to see Aerovolt on the...
Just call me, I'm sorry.
We need to see Aerovolt on the rally this year. That's how you can make things better for everyone.
Colin Boyden? Uh-huh. Yeah. Guy Hayden. Yeah. What an absolute fool. Didn't even know he was in the GF100.
I didn't know I was on the GF100. I'm sorry. I thought I'd been dropped out this year. Well, in that case, I can say what I said last year, which is now for the last 4 years, I think it is, I've been consistently mid to lower mid table. So I'm kind of like a mid to lower Premier team, maybe like the Everton of EV, something like that. So
Accrington Stanley.
Yeah, I'm consistent. Yeah. I did offer Colin Boyton a ride in electric aircraft as well, and I was firmly turned down. He doesn't fly, apparently. Not a good flyer.
Oh wow!
The delicate little flower.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But it would be amazing. We're doing, obviously, you know about the EV rally that we do every year. And it's very much our job to make sure it continues to be groundbreaking, continues to push the boundaries. And this year, there's a really strong sort of feature to think about different vehicles that are now on the market and putting them through their paces. For example, we've got, last year we had electric trucks, but this year we've got the big electric trucks are coming. We've got Jamie Fretwell's from Mercedes and a few others will be en route. And I would just love the idea that you would turn up in your Aerovolt with your Electroverse card and start tapping people in to charge it. It would just be a great image. Make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. We would definitely love to be involved. Is it still a race?
It's never been a race for insurance purposes.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yes, we would love to be involved. And I'm sure in an aircraft, we do quite well for insurance purposes in what is not a race.
Doesn't that show a really competitive side to you, Guy? It just came out. Wow. Is it a race? I'll do it if it's a race. I'll do anything.
I was convinced it was, yeah.
Wow. So you really are a beast, aren't you? You're a machine.
I wouldn't say that. I suppose I am quite competitive. I can be quite
You're humble, but
I'm
you want to win.
Against myself. Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Be the best you can be?
Yeah, I have this problem where I think I'm never really satisfied.
Really?
Yeah, probably. I think I'm one of those people. It's always what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next. I think that's how I'm built.
So for you at the moment, what are the things on your horizon that are next? I mean, obviously, you've almost got to wait for the market to catch up with you. You're that far ahead of where the curve is. Mm-hmm. So what is next? What fills in the gap between now created the thing and waiting for the market to deliver revenue?
Yeah, much the same has happened in the electric car industry, to be honest. It's about putting chargers in the ground, encouraging the use of electric aircraft. We've certainly got plans to have more involvement with electric leasing companies and the businesses that are getting the aircraft out there. But of course, that's not our bag. For us, it's about sites. It's about chargers in the ground. It's about showing people that this is possible. Already, the flight schools particularly have been really receptive. Some of the cost savings on operations that you can get on electric versus, you know, traditional avgas are huge. And so the flight schools have been really quite supportive and quite keen to do this. So I think it's about the next thing is put chargers in the ground and then really encourage the uptake, get people into electric aircraft, get people trying them, get people flying in them. And then, yeah, the UK and next the world.
I've yet to experience an electric plane. Does it have the same performance characteristics as a car versus the internal combustion engine in that it's much more torque, much quicker to accelerate? Does it have those differences that make it even more fun to fly? Do you know?
The torque and the acceleration thing don't really come into it too much. Maybe the acceleration, it's quite short takeoff, for example. But it's a very light aircraft, so it's like 450 kilos in terms of...
I weigh almost that much. Yeah.
So it's really light, so it moves about a lot. It's really responsive to fly, and it's very quiet, so that's the big thing. If you're on an airfield, if you've ever been on an airfield next to a fairly small aircraft, you know they're really noisy. The electric aircraft is completely different. It's a completely different thing. Mm. If you've ever seen one of these large model electric aircraft or something, it sounds like one of those. And at about 100 meters in the air, you can't hear it. So it is a different feel. But in terms of the flying of it, actually, the principles and things are much the same. Yeah.
Okay, I have an infrastructure question. I'm at the mercy of the Gloucestershire Wi-Fi, but I was thinking carefully about the fact that a lot of these aerodromes and landing strips are going to be well satisfied for the power that they need for the general sort of operations building, but not necessarily for charging a plane. Now, this is where, I don't know if you saw the news this week, battery energy storage systems are being deployed in places like Cyprus, where they have a similar problem. So they've got sort of they've got bases where they need to be doing electric vehicles and probably futuristically planes as well. So they've deployed batteries basically. And for those who are listening who are interested, that's about making sure that you can have the power that you need with a very small connection. So you've done this. I see there's a pioneering company that's joined forces with you guys. You're their first customer. This was written up by Alec Peachey's Transport and Energy. So can you tell us a bit about how that partnership came around?
We have done this. Yeah, you're right. So in the car industry, it's definitely the case. There's sites where you can't get power. But in the car industry, you can go, well, we won't do this bit of the car park, we'll do the other side. Or we won't do this particular fast food site, we'll do the next one down the road. So you've got options. Whereas with an aerodrome, you do that aerodrome, but there's not another one next door, or there's not another one for, you know, X number of miles. So it's much more critical that where you've got a site that's good for electrification, you do all that you can to somehow make the grid work. And we've done silly, long, you know, multiple hundred meter digs to put power into sites already, but we don't want to be doing those all the time. So there is a site down south, Dunk as well, which is near Honiton next to it. They've got a great flight school there, good, busy general aviation place, a good cafe, which is big in the general aviation world. Lots of sites get judged on cafes. So they've got all these things, all the right mix of stuff, but power is something they ain't got. And to get power there wasn't possible and would cost loads and take loads of time. So what we've done there is we work with a company called Ally, who build battery storage systems, so containerized essentially, about half a container size. And that is simply stacked car batteries. Inside of it, it's 4x Tesla batteries stacked, and it holds 300 kilowatts of power. So we trickle charge that off a really small single phase supply, charge those batteries up, and then as and when an aircraft comes along, it dumps the power into the aircraft charger, so DC output into the aircraft charger. And we've also got 4 car chargers there running 22 kilowatts AC off the same battery. So it's an innovative way to provide the solution on a site. The whole commercials of the battery system are still something, frankly, that's being worked out. It's quite expensive, let's be fair.
Yeah.
But in terms of getting chargers in the ground and the wider piece of encouraging uptake, it will need to be part of what we do.
I mean, aviation is expensive, right? And when that news story broke a couple of weeks ago with what you guys are up to and what you're doing, it's obviously capturing the imagination and it's proving a concept. And I likened it in my mind when people were saying, what's the point? It's a tiny, tiny piece of infrastructure that hasn't been proven on scale, not interested, come back later when you've proven it. And I was like, they are proving it. This reminds me of when you've got a sort of catwalk runway where those clothes are ridiculous. Nobody's really going to take exactly what they see and wear it down the shops, are you? But what you're doing is showing that battery energy storage systems work. Electric planes are viable and can work. There is a market out there that can utilize these systems that are already in existence. But you're right, it's those commercial, weighing up the commercials, which really will be the proof. I think you're the right man for this job. I really do, Guy. You'll have the vision to succeed. And I think that's what Aerovolt have absolutely nailed in making sure you're part of their team. Congrats.
Yeah. It comes back to this, just do it, right? You can quite easily say, oh, we can't do that. Or you can find a way to do it and prove a concept and really encourage a new industry, which is so much of what we're doing. You find a way to make it work.
When you're battering your way through the jungle of a new startup, you often come across almost immovable objects, things that you wish you didn't have to deal with. And you don't get sometimes the support that you need. The commercial relationships can be difficult because there isn't that income potential. What are the things that you need to scale and get a speed of delivery and a scale of delivery that makes your business commercially stand on its own two feet? Is it government support? Is it better commercial relationships? What are the missing elements?
I'd give you five answers to that, and numbers one Excellent. Through five would all be cash.
It's kind of where I was going, really.
Yeah. So essentially, it comes down to cash, right? We're fundraising at the moment. We know what we're doing. We know how to get charges in the ground. We know how to form commercial relationships. Look at the industry. On the whole, airfields are keen to do this, are keen to be on board and be part of the kind of the future. So that's all good. We're actually getting good support from the CAA, the Civil Aviation Authority. We've had multiple meetings with them. Their innovation team have been really supportive. There's discussion about things like an electric private pilot's license, same as you can have like an automatic license in a car. There's discussion about that being part of the future. There's discussion around how we can integrate with existing air traffic control systems and things. There's some really good support we're getting from the CAA, and they're kind of championing what we're doing. There's discussion around electric vertical takeoff. So we are in discussion about projects to be involved with the CAA on Aerovolt sites, because that is certainly part of what we want to do in the future. Whilst it's light aircraft now, eVTOL is absolutely part of our roadmap. And then actually governments thus far, although we've not had loads of dealings with them, the reception to what we're trying to do has been overwhelmingly positive. I've got a meeting with the Secretary of State next month to discuss making the UK a world leader in electric aviation. I'm sure part of that is, you know, we are de facto the UK now one of the world leaders in electric aviation, because we have the only network in the world. We are the only place in the world that you can go and test an electric aircraft on a network, full stop. And that's because of what we're doing. So, of course, politicians are quite keen to get on board with that and support where they can. And I'm sure basking a bit of that glow. And we welcome them to do so. So, actually, we're getting a lot of support across the board. All we need is to deploy capital. And we need capital to do that. So we're fundraising at the moment. There's a lot of ongoing discussions, which are really positive, frankly. But cash, it just comes down to cash, John.
Well, you did make me laugh. And also, of course you're meeting the Secretary of State. Of course you are, Guy, because that's exactly what you do. You don't just do a job. You're like, what else could I do with this? I've got a good idea. Well, I did thoroughly enjoy a post that you put out, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago or something, where you were ticking two things off your bucket list at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And John is a self-confessed ex-petrolhead, or still a petrolhead, but loves EV too. I don't know how you best describe that. But please tell John what you did with the runway.
Yeah. two things I did for the first time. So obviously I'm learning to fly this year, but I don't yet have a pilot's license. I did land an aircraft for the first time. So that was a boyhood dream ticked off that I've finally done that. And TASD a Taycan down an empty runway.
Oh,
I've well, got a video. Yeah, it's Taycan GTS. Is it GTS? And we were at Dunk as well. We had the runway to ourselves. Porsche kindly lent us some Taycans for the event. And yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Empty runway. Taycans over there.
It's a bit like a fighter jet, isn't it? When you put it into launch control, I remember when I did it, and I didn't do it on a runway, but I remember my lungs hitting my spine. and that was a hell of a feeling. You just think, this cannot be legal to go this fast. Amazing.
It was very good. My only disappointment that it was in the wet. So I think I hit about 125, but I need to go back and do it in the dry. I can definitely go faster.
You absolutely do. And there's a few airfields around where I grew up, including Kemble Aerodrome, where a lot of planes go to die. But there's been lots of Top Gear episodes that have made good use of it. So there also is a vertical takeoff sort of technology and development in Gloucestershire, which I'm sure you know all about, because they'll probably be a massive competitor now. But I do think it'd be so exciting to see EV Cafe turn up in an aerovolt vessel and just do a Top Gear style challenge with all of us. And John, I would pick you for the speed drive. I think it would have to be you.
I think
you're challenging me to a drag race.
I've got an idea. Sam, of course, could be collected from his castle in a Taycan, taken to the airfield, get into an electric car. I could set off in another electric car with you, Sarah, and Paul, and Johnny, and off we go. Let's see if we can beat Lord Farquaad.
I would very much like to see if my Zero electric motorbike could be incorporated into this game, because there would be some amazing footage there with the plane, the bike, the leathers, the fast car, and Paul in a van behind us all chugging along slowly.
Let's do that. It'd be like that Top Gear episode where they raced, what was it, the Veyron against the Eurofighter. I think we should emulate that. We should emulate that in electric. And I know plenty of people now that have got runways.
JFDI, just flying, do it.
There we go, perfect. is that my new LinkedIn tagline? Could be.
Yeah, you're not going to top that, but you have to pay us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guy, I've got one question, which is a practical question. You said that you're going through a fundraising cycle just now. How do people get involved, find out more information if they hear this and think, I want to get a piece of that?
I suppose the most direct route is to find me. LinkedIn is, you know, I live on LinkedIn, as most of us do. So if you look for Guy Hayden on LinkedIn, you can find me. More than happy to receive messages about fundraising. I can put my details as well, along with the details for this podcast. Also, if you Google AeroVolt, AeroVolt, you'll find all information on there. Feel free to ping us a message. We're more than interested to talk to interested parties, whether that's fundraising, people who are maybe interested in joining the team at some point, whether it's aerodromes and flight schools, anyone who's just into EV. We really appreciate the support, so please get in touch.
Guy, you're an outstanding human being with the drive to deliver, and I've got no doubt that AeroVolt is going to go from strength to strength. Any last thoughts, Sarah?
Yeah, EV Cafe is going on tour in 24, popping up at all sorts of shows throughout the coming months. Which ones have you guys got your sights set on that we might cross paths?
Oh, that I would say is TBC. Everything is dependent on funding. Shows are very expensive, as we know. But there's certainly been discussion around Fully Charged. They've never yet done flights at Fully Charged. So there could be an opportunity there at Farnborough, since it is an airport. There's also discussion about events in the US, because we've got some plans over there. And obviously launching in Europe probably later this year as well. So yeah, watch this space, I think, Sarah. However, if any of the EV Cafe team want to come and fly, I know a man who can work that out.
Sarah's hand has never moved faster.
There we go. So if the roadshow fancies, you know, visiting an aerodrome cafe, then let's do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guy, You're an incredibly generous and kind human being, as well as a man who's going to deliver everything that you say you're going to deliver. I've got no doubt. It's been a real joy to spend some time with you. Thank you for taking time out from your busy day. And if there's anything we can do in terms of helping you do those things, please give us a shout, John.
That's what you can do. Give us a big old check for funding.
Unfortunately, we'd need to go to Sam.
One of those big charity checks. We could do that
for £20. No bother at all. Listen, buddy, thank you so much. It's been really, really fabulous to get to know you a wee bit. Sarah, are there any secrets about Guy?
Yes, but that's why I've been more quiet this time, because I don't want to say a massive clangor. But yeah, if you are lucky enough to cross paths with Guy, please do take that opportunity to enjoy the smiles and laughter, but know that you're dealing with someone very serious, committed and reliable.
Yeah, he reminds me of a cobra. You know, he doesn't mess about. He's going to deliver. Yeah, oh, yeah. You mess with this and you'll be sorry, because it's going to go down. With Guy Hayden. Guy, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time. If you've enjoyed this one, there are loads of podcasts from the EV Cafe Takeaway, and you can find them all on our website, evcafe.org/podcasts. You can also find them on all the podcast channels. So if you go to Google or Apple or wherever, Spotify, search for EV Cafe Takeaway. And then you can find there are about 50 or so of these where we talk to those inspiring individuals who go and make tomorrow a little bit better and today just fabulous. Guy, thank you, my friend.
Thank you, John.
We'll see you soon. Cheers. Take care.
Thanks, Guy.